Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You and Don are frighteningly similar. It just, it's scary, the crap you two believe in. I gotta live, it's like an echo chamber. I gotta deal with it every day in real life for 40 years with you, and every day in real life for 60 years with him. And it's just awful, because I gotta hear him say, you know, they could just have more shots on goal. I'm like, shut up.
Shoot it more. Yeah.
Shut up, Tony.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
They should take more shots on goal.
That's a fair point.
They should. It'd be great. And I got some things to say. I didn't watch the game last night. I didn't really care. I watched a quarter of it.
I didn't.
Sorry about
how
that.
Dare you silence?
Yeah, sorry about it that. Didn't. Did you watch?
I didn't watch any, so we were watching the finality of the Holiday Baking Championship.
I want to get to that. I want to get to
thoughts.
That. I want to get to that.
Are we doing spoilers or no?
No, we are not doing. I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
I'm going to get to that. Because I wanted to say that the reason I'm not talking about the game is because once again, and the schedule, I did this for 3 years. The schedule is set in stone in April. You think you would have thought
Green Bay
Packers
Rams
you would have thought
it's a winner.
You can't flex. If you go back, cannot take that game away and put another game in, and so it becomes a 4-9 team against the 6-8 team. And even though Aaron Rodgers is great to watch and the Rams uniforms are still cool, yeah, it doesn't mean much, if anything at all.
So if you're circling a game for a delayed bar mitzvah present?
Like Chuck Todd. But Chuck Todd sent me a picture of
did
himself
he do the leap?
With a big mask on, and he said, this is for warmth. You know, they were out there, and
right.
I think Chuck was very happy to go. And look, Chuck had Miami. Chuck had Miami over Buffalo. People thought he was the dumbest guy in the world. Chuck had Miami. So I'm not going to go into that and the ramifications of that game. There are three things I want to talk about, one very briefly. One is I want to thank Jolene Wojcik because she sent us two bottles of salted caramel whiskey, one for me and one for Michael, and Michael has refused to take his home.
No, I'm sharing it with Mom. Jolene, okay. I was looking forward to a saved seat just outside the 18th green.
Okay, all right. So, but
do
thank
that
you.
Instead.
We'll open this and we'll see what it's like. Now there's two other things.
Dad was very confused because the marketing has the
down.
Label upside down.
It's upside down.
So he was trying to read it sideways until he realized he could just turn it
upside down.
Down
and I could do it. It's very weird. It's very weird. Two things I want to talk about. First, we'll talk about what Michael mentioned. On the Food Channel, on the Food Network, there was the culmination of a baking thing. I don't know, you know.
Competition.
Baking everything started with Simon Cowell. Everything started with American Idol. Everything. All programming in the last 20 years basically started with Simon Cowell, who, however much money he has made, it's not enough. It's like Michael Jordan with Nike. It doesn't matter what you give him. It's not enough.
Ride home with the rundown.
Yeah, ride home with
right.
the rundown. Yeah. So why don't you talk about who was on this show and what happened?
Well, for us, I think they might have started with 8 or 10 competitors.
I thought it was 12.
12, okay. There's the Holiday Baking Championship on the Food Network. I think this is its 8th season.
And this is a show Jesse Palmer is on.
Yeah.
He hosts.
A pro quarterback.
That's right.
Jesse Palmer is on.
Delivering the puns. Yeah. And so this is a mix of home chefs, home bakers. I think more recently you'd look at the Great British Baking Off as sort of the pipeline for this type of show. But it's a mix of home chefs, professional pastry makers. And we were watching this because one of the competitors we found out was pastry chef Drew Tevis of Sodel Concepts of Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, a dear friend of my sister Liz, a friend of the family, and the baker of my wedding cake.
That's right.
A slice of that may still be in his freezer. We confirmed this in November.
Your wedding cake, and he won.
He won?
He went all the way through. Now, he knew this. Of course, you're sworn to secrecy. They probably take the title away from you.
Oh, yeah.
But he won.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's,
so as we've been watching, I've been so interested about, because it all comes down to the editing as to what they, how they want to try and front the, you know, is the front runner, did they make a mistake early? Are they going to be saved in the end? Drew, from the start, had the best tasting food. Sometimes it did not look as sort of delicate as you might want for a baking championship, but that's also somebody who's mostly doing restaurant work and event work, you assume, where you're going, I'm going for taste. I'm not necessarily trying to get 300 dishes out that look like they've were, you know, painstakingly.
You're not just going to look at it. At some point, you're going to eat it.
And it was someone who seemed to understand the rules, which is step one, make it taste good. And then from there, we can clean it up.
I'm baking here.
The tart that he made, it was like a margarita with these, yeah. I'm not smoking inside. the tart that he made that was like a margarita flavored with agave plants was beautiful. So it's like, I'm a pro. You want me to show up? Here we go.
SoDel, I believe, stands for Southern Delaware, and it's a series of restaurants, I assume. Now, he and Elizabeth were very, very close. They worked together for years, and Elizabeth always said, he's great. He's just great. And he won this thing.
That's fantastic.
Now, I don't know how many people on the street would recognize him. You know, the people that watch the Food Network are going to know who he is.
That's the best kind of celebrity. A certain number of people recognize you, but you can go out and have dinner.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But that fits into the profile of Rehoboth, where it's a destination foodie town.
Yeah.
He has a signature hairdo.
Yes, he does.
What you never know about somebody like that, because he's gregarious, he's wonderful to be around, but he lights up the TV screen, and you could see this with his relationship with Carla Hall, one of the judges there. And then he become part of the ecosystem of the Food Network. I would bring him on for everything.
That's what I asked Carol.
He's such a good advocate for the other competitors.
Carol told me this morning that he had won, and I said, well, what is the future? Would he become a judge? Would he be on the, you know, a staple on the Food Network? Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Or like the dessert specials for any other show that you're going to bring on, you know, a challenge, a dessert challenge, and we're bringing on Drew.
It's so, I mean, I didn't watch the show, of course. I didn't watch it because all I do is watch sports. But I was thrilled to find out, and I'm glad you guys watched it.
What was so great is, and again, this comes down to TV magic
made
and the editing.
Made your wedding cake.
They've had a couple of blunders because you don't necessarily know how a challenge is going to work. Let's say I want you to do something in 2 hours, but the type of frosting or the glaze or the piping really can't set in that amount of time. He would be the one who would go on and defend the other competitors.
That's
saying,
what Carol said. He was so kind to everyone.
Yeah, this did not work, and here's why. Or this didn't work on TV. This is why we had to change the snowman challenge, where it didn't necessarily have to meet a height requirement. So he just had a wider view of competition in TV.
I just thought that was really cool. Okay, that was one thing I wanted to talk about. The next thing I wanted to talk about was my dog, who is sitting on her chair. She's laying down right now. She's tired, and the reason she's tired, she had a very busy day yesterday. In the morning, as we were walking back home, she was sniffing around in a, not at the front yard, but the little area past the sidewalk, a little shrubbery area.
Mm-hmm.
And she came up, she was really sniffing around. She came up with a big bone in her mouth.
The tree box area.
Hmm?
Like the tree box area.
It was flocks, I think is what they call this kind of, you know, growth.
Was the bone human?
No, I don't know if it was human. I don't know if it was human, but it was pretty big.
How close were you to Rock Creek Park?
Exactly.
So I did what a dog owner is supposed to do. I stuck my hands in her mouth to try to pry open her mouth to take the bone. And she would not let me do it.
Oh,
she would. Mm. I mean, she's stronger than I am.
Save the bone for Henry Jones.
Because Henry don't eat no meat. So I tried and tried and tried, and then I missed and sort of fell away. And she ran away. She yanked free from me with the leash and just laughed at me. And turned around time after time and gnawed on the bone and swallowed the bone.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
swallowed the bone. This can't be good.
No.
When a dog swallows a bone, it can't be good. And I thought that was it for the day. I thought that was the worst thing that would happen.
Chapter one.
Then I found out later in the day, and she'd never done this before, what I'm going to describe. The butter was out. It was on top of the counter. And I had used the butter for something. There was a full stick of butter, except for 1/32nd, which I just used to put on a piece of toast.
I feel like I know where this is heading.
The covered dish? Uncovered.
It was uncovered. The cover was next to it, but it was uncovered.
It's a beautiful cover.
And then about an hour later,
yep.
I noticed the entire stick of butter was gone. And I said to Carol, did you use the butter? She goes, no.
Did you use the whole stick of butter?
She said, no.
The recipe called for 6 tablespoons.
The dog had never done this. We never saw the dog with her paws on the counter or her paws on a table. She's disinterested in people food because she's never been given people food. And she ate the entire stick of butter.
Well,
and I mentioned that to you, and you did some research. And what did your research tell you?
Well, the research said it's not fatal. But it can...
Bone and butter, the B&B.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you're going to have bones, you got to have butter with
the
bones, right?
You got to have something to ease it down.
Exactly. But it said the next couple of days could be interesting with her digestive system.
Diarrhea, it said.
Yes, yes. That, they said that's at the worst.
So what kind of butter were you dealing with? Is this a Lando Lakes?
Lando
salted?
Lakes.
Unsalted?
I would have gone Kerrygold.
Yeah. Lando Lakes. Thick butter.
But you didn't see the crime.
Didn't see the crumb.
The butter is gone. It's not clear the dog ate the butter.
I'm adding one and one.
Right. All right. All right.
I think this is retaliatory from when we came over for the first night of Hanukkah and she saw the boys getting into the butter for their bagel.
Maybe that's it. Mm-hmm. Maybe she
got the idea in her
head. She's a very smart dog.
Yes.
Very smart.
Now, Maggie would do this sort of thing
constantly.
All the time,
but
right?
She was a bird dog.
Constantly.
She liked the games.
My original dog, the Puna, did an incredible thing when I was about 7 years old. The Puna went into a cabinet, took out a box of walnuts and a box of brownies, unmade brownies,
really?
And ate them both.
Sure.
Ate them both.
Made the mix in the stomach.
Yeah. The Puna did that. But this dog...
Adding the nuts really just...
Chessie had never done that.
To a fine palate.
Yeah.
Well, there's a reckoning for me. At 4 o'clock in the morning...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
She's right by my head, and she's whining. And there's only one thing that this whining means. Go. Only one thing. I got to get out of here.
Time to go.
I got to get out of here now. And I knew that it was time to go. So I put on some clothes. And at first, I just let her loose in the backyard. That wasn't cutting it. She didn't want that.
Routine.
She wanted to be put on a leash and taken. So she was. And she went, I don't know, 80 feet from the house and had... bad stuff and all yellow.
Ugh.
Now, proof for people like Chris. Right.
Well, I was just saying, don't let's not indict the dog, but yes, that's
and
strong.
Then,
it feels pretty
at
damning.
At 6:30, she went out at her regular time and did it again.
Yeah.
So Carol cooked rice. Rice is a binding food, and we gave her some rice.
So we need the pumpkin yet, or is the rice going to
be? We don't
be
have
enough?
Any pumpkin. I don't know that we have pumpkin. Pumpkin also is binding.
She's awoken.
Well,
she's been told.
So
she was very joyful when she came. You know,
she gave me a very good greeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. She seemed fine.
I don't think she's unfine. She's just got diarrhea.
Smell the butter on her breath.
Yeah. So. I thought it was a little out of line that you gave her another stick of butter.
Well, it's our usual greeting. I didn't know. I didn't know about the previous butter.
So she
got an appetite for it.
She'd never done this
that you know of.
Well, you're through the looking glass now.
Yeah.
I mean, now you got to watch everything.
Yeah. Can't put anything uncovered up on on the countertops. Yeah. Bad. Very bad.
Have you checked your wallet?
No, I haven't.
At $100.
Yeah.
Now she starts with the small bills.
Right. Just want to be obvious, right?
Yeah, so you don't want to be, you want to be able to covet that for a while and just keep working the back channel of the ones and the
remember
fives.
Remember when you had to put the brick on the trash can with Maggie?
Yeah. So
you had to close the refrigerator door, right? And like lock it.
Had to put a lock on it.
Because she would open the refrigerator.
Opened it with her nose.
Really?
She opened it.
That's a smart
with her
dog.
Nose.
Just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. This was, I mean, imagine my feeling when I actually said to Carol, did you use the butter?
I mean, that's a lot of butter. Did you use the full stick to butter your bagel?
Did you use the butter? Because if not, I think the dog ate it. Anyway, I'm looking at her.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. When we come back, Brian Windhorst joins us. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from the people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
These are, and this is, the Virginia Coalition. They're playing at the historic Howard Theater on December 22nd, which is Thursday. It's in 2 days. I know that date. While the tables and booths are sold out, there are plenty of dance floor tickets available. This is a song called Weekend in L.A. It's a brand new song about the sometimes terrible yet seductive vibe of that town. These are sent to us by Steve Dawson, who I assume is a member of the band, and he sent us stuff before. Virginia Coalition, very good. They play in Brian Windhorst. We haven't talked to Brian in a while. I will reveal my prejudice that I don't really check into the NBA season, which Brian covers so well, until Christmas. I don't, which leads me to my first question, which is why don't they start on Christmas? They seem to be buried by football and this year buried by the World Cup. Why don't they start on Christmas?
Now they're going to get buried on Christmas too, because the way Christmas falls on a weekend,
yeah,
the NFL has 3 games,
yeah,
and their marquee day is going to get snowed under by NFL ratings. You know, this
will lead Wilbon to complain, as you know. Wilbon will say, the NFL, and then he'll talk rhapsodically about the NBA, but go ahead.
Well, you know, the alpha male, the big dog gets the spoils.
Yeah.
You know, the NBA, this has been talked about for years, and people thought about this. You know, maybe the NBA should reduce its season and start around Christmas. And then a couple of years ago, coming out of the COVID year, they did start at Christmas. They started, I think, the first games were December 23rd. And then, you know, the idea was, you know, the big buildup in the first week would be the Christmas Day game.
Right.
And, Tony, it hurt. The league's ratings were at an all-time worst.
Oh.
And when they went back to the normal schedule, it increased. Having said that, you are right. A huge section of the casual sports fans do not pay attention to the NBA in November and December.
No.
And
no.
Always has been thus.
Yeah.
Yet, there were 10 games last night or something, and the players played in them, and they all got their paychecks from them. And so onward we go.
Now, I mean, my point would be that there are these two television networks, Turner and ESPN, that are spending unbelievable gobs of money on the NBA and would continue to do so because they need programming, you know, and it's successful for them. And you wouldn't have to have an 82-game schedule. When, you know, there's, I'm sure you get the same sense that there's a Tuesday night game in San Antonio, and even if it's San Antonio and, say, Philadelphia, it's a Tuesday night game. And there's going to be a Thursday night game, and there just was a Sunday game, and you just go, really? I don't really care. And I wonder if you sense that or if that's just me.
No, you're right, but let me just tell you something about the NBA. So many NBA games, not all, but many, and I would even go so far as to say the average NBA game over the course of the regular season sort of goes through the motions for three quarters.
Yeah.
And then many games end up getting decided in the fourth quarter. The players play much harder. There's a lot, you know, you see a lot more things happen in the fourth quarter. It's a much higher level of play. It's also the worst quarter for the teams in terms of revenue. The teams will all tell you that the fourth quarter is all expenses, that, you know, they have to stop selling beer at the end of the third quarter. People have already eaten their dinner. And so basically,
I didn't know that.
The first three quarters are to pay the bills, and the fourth quarter is for the competition. And essentially, that's the way the NBA season goes. The first three quarters are to pay the bills, and the fourth quarter is for the competition, although the playoffs make a lot of money for teams. But essentially, that's a lot of the way it goes. You play the game on Tuesday in San Antonio because you are getting season ticket holders and your local TV money and all that stuff, and that helps pay everybody's $30 million salary. And then when it comes down to when the competition really matters, they turn on the show. And that is the NBA.
This is so wonderful. That's an explanation I've never heard before. Because all I get from Mike is, I went to this game the other night. Everybody's talking about basketball. I said, well, you went to a basketball game. Yeah, sure. No, everybody's talking about it. So this leads me to this question. And I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but I suspect you have. What baseball has done is they have hired Theo Epstein, the smartest guy in the room. And they've said, we got a problem here. We're not doing as well as we'd like to do. We may be regressing. We got a great game, but no one is responding to it. Can you help us with some changes? And Theo Epstein has come up with these changes. They'll be instituted, some of them, next year. I hope they're great. Is there a Theo Epstein in basketball? And the reason I bring this up is because I have become convinced, Brian, and I've watched pro basketball my entire life because it basically started when I was born, that the players are too good for the court now. They're too good for the dimensions of the court. People say they don't play defense. They do play defense. They're too good now. And the referees allow them to play in such a way that they discourage defense, which happens in most sports. Is there a Theo Epstein who will look at this?
Well, here we go again with, so we're going to cross comparisons here. You are aware that we have a heavy inflation in the country right now, and the Fed is raising interest rates to calm down the inflation. Well, the NBA is kind of doing the same thing. How's this for my TED Talk?
Yeah.
Scoring is absolutely wild.
Yes.
We are routinely seeing teams score 130, 140 points. 150-point games are becoming more and more commonplace. I mean, that was a once-in-3, 4, 5-year situation very recently. And so, to try to curb this inflation, the NBA league office is trying to raise interest rates by starting to call traveling and carrying.
Yes, yes. We talked about that the other week, yes.
And it's driving the players crazy because they have gotten used to, some of them, their whole careers, absolutely crazily traveling.
Four steps, yes.
I mean, it's not so much, I think fans react to when they see a guy go down the lane and not dribble, and of course that happens, but where it's crazy is when the players are starting their moves, where they're able to, like, you know, change their pivot feet when they're starting their moves and their defender has no idea where they're going. And the carrying of the ball, I mean, these point guards are masters, but they also, by the letter of the law, carry it like 70% of the time. So the attempt here is to, yes, of course, Tony, I mean, I've heard people over the years talk about, well, the court needs to be widened,
etc. Or the basket needs to be raised, maybe.
Well, I haven't heard that one. Hmm. The widening of the court is an interesting concept. However, economically, it fails because the most valuable seats are next to the court. And you start taking out rows, that's not going to fly. So in the interim, what they can control is trying to call more violations to give the defense a chance. And that's what they're attempting to do. But I will also tell you this, that, again, historically in the NBA, every year they have certain goals for officials, and they call it for a couple of months, and then we get into the playoffs,
and
it's hand-to-hand combat, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah. I got another question. How come not a single player criticized Kyrie Irving, and they all criticized Robert Sarver? How come? How come nobody had enough courage to say, this was not great?
This is a little bit dicey for somebody like me to answer, Tony.
Then I'll take it off the table.
But I'll just say that there are certain issues that players have demonstrated to be very passionate about when it comes to being progressive in the country, and other issues they haven't shown the same level of aggression, or, you know, interest in being progressive about.
Yeah, that's a fair answer. Yeah. I feel that way about Adam Silver too, and I've said that about Adam Silver. You know, because I can say pretty much what I want, and Adam Silver doesn't even listen, so it doesn't really matter. It just struck me as, you know, as noticeable, very noticeable.
I do think it's something that should be noticed.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. I wanted to ask about two teams, which were surprising to me. I don't want to keep you forever, but I looked at the standings, and there are three or four teams that are sort of way out there in front, And they'll come back to the pack at some point. Like Boston just lost twice to Orlando. Orlando's a joke. So, I mean, people come back to the pack. But the Knicks, awful team, 17 and 13. Sacramento, for decades, an awful team, 16 and 12. Do they have it figured out? And if they do, how?
Well, it's a challenging day to ask about Sacramento because they just lost at home last night to Charlotte, who is probably the most disappointing organization over the last decade. Although maybe as a Knicks fan, you would argue that. Yes. You know, but Sacramento, you know, they have a new coach in Mike Brown, and he's a good coach.
He's good.
Yes. I mean, I've known Mike for 15 years. I think a lot of him, and he has routinely made his teams better. I don't know if he's going to challenge Phil Jackson as the greatest coach of all time, but he's made his teams better. He's pretty much been in the playoffs almost every year he's coached in the NBA. But they made a trade last year, Tony, that was they've been just relentlessly mocked for. Because they traded Tyrese Halliburton, who is one of the better young guards.
Yeah,
he
scores a lot of points, yeah.
Yeah, he's leading the league in assists. People love him. They traded him for Domantas Sabonis, a big man, and they said, this is a guard league now. They traded for a big man who doesn't defend, and not only that, he's only a power forward. He's not a center. And that trade has worked out really, really well for them, even though to this day people think that they totally botched it. But the Knicks, I think your listenership may be a little bit more than that. So more interested in that, I should say. Something you don't always see this in the NBA, and it's one of the things that you hear people like lament coaching decisions and stuff. And sometimes I kind of roll my eyes and say, well, what? You want the coach to play this 11th man, and all of a sudden the team is going to change? And that never happens. But Tom Thibodeau basically started playing two players that he wasn't playing, Quentin Grimes and Deuce McBride. And it isn't just about those two players, but the Knicks were one of the worst defensive teams in the league, which I know had to drive Thibodeau crazy.
Yeah, that's what he plays for, defense, yeah.
And they were at one point were giving up historic amounts of three-pointers. And, you know, this game is very largely a three-point game now, and if you get clobbered in the three-point category, it's very difficult to win. And those two guys are better defensive players, and he still doesn't play McBride the amount of minutes that the Knicks fans want. But he is undefeated. They are undefeated this year when he plays 15 minutes or more. Wow. I think they won over the weekend. I think he played 13 minutes and they won. So But Quentin Grimes and McAllister playing on the perimeter have completely changed the Knicks' perimeter defense. And it's not just them. They've inspired change. But now all of a sudden, the Knicks are defending the three, and it's given them a better chance. And they have some good offensive players. Tony, they have three guys making $100 million, or at least on $100 million contracts, R.J. Barrett, Jalen Brunson, and Julius Randle. None of them are true stars. I mean, they're standouts. You know, Brunson has a case to make the All-Star team. I don't know if he will, but they're good, not great players. And that's kind of been the Knicks, is that they've had a lot of games where they've been good, not great, and then they lose it in the end. Well, that defensive change, there was just that little thing that Thibodeau did, made their defense a little bit better, and now all of a sudden they're winning, and they're making comeback wins. And New York, Tony, New York is the center of the basketball world.
Yes.
The Nets have won 10 of 11. The Knicks have won seven in a row. It hasn't been this way in the 20 years I've covered the NBA. It's
no,
amazing.
You're right. No, it, and I've learned more today about the NBA than I have in years because because all they ever ask us to do on the PTI show, all they ever ask us to, can you talk about the Lakers and that Golden State's not winning on the road? And I go, aren't you bored with this? You know, but that's all we do, Lakers and Golden State. And I mean,
it's
Mike
crazy,
would do more.
It? It's crazy.
Yeah, Mike would break down every single team in the league. But they're, you know, the larger questions. That's interesting about the Knicks. Well, who do the Knicks love? Over a long period of time, the Knicks love quirky guys. They don't, yes, they loved Willis Reed and Walt Frazier, but they really loved Mike Reardon, like in that period of time. They really loved John Starks.
I was going to say Starks.
In that period of time. And if you're telling me that these kids come out and they defend, they are going to love that. They are a pretty sophisticated crowd, even though the owner has just killed the team. You agree with that, right? They're sophisticated.
Jim Dolan doesn't get the venom he probably deserves.
He's the worst.
Run that team.
He's another guy who inherited a team. This is like Jim Irsay. You inherited a team, and you think, what's the great line? You're born on third base, and you think you hit a triple. What, are you kidding me? Dolan and Irsay are that way, don't you think, Brian?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm only a casual observer of the NFL. I will take your word for that. But Irsay, I've read
a clown team.
Yeah. I just know that, you know, this is my 20th year covering the NBA. So 2003, I come bouncing in and go to Madison Square Garden for the first time. And I heard all these stories about it. Oh, my God, the garden. Yeah. And I was kind of like, that's it? But I got to tell you, that isn't it. 20 years in. Yeah. I now can say it's an amazing place to watch a game. They've renovated the building since then. They've gotten rid of most of the rats, and it's a much nicer place to watch a game. And the fans there are great, and the sensibility of the New York fan is terrific, and it's a great place to watch a game. And when the Knicks are good, which hasn't happened very often, it's amazing to be in there when the Knicks are good. And like right now, Jalen, like last year, Tony, some of the folks they had playing point guard, you know, I don't want to insult anybody on mass media, but it was really a kind of a bleep show with what they were running out
there. Agree.
So they went out and spent $100 million on a real NBA point guard, and it makes a big difference. And at some point, Tony, and I've been saying this for 4 or 5 years now, and I've never been right, and I don't know what to say. At some point, a superstar player is going to go into his team and say, trade me to the New York Knicks, nowhere else. And the Knicks are sitting there with 11 tradable first-round picks, which is what you have to trade for a star player. And I've been waiting for it and waiting for it and waiting for it. And I thought there had been other guys that would happen. I thought there were guys the Knicks would do the deal for.
Yeah.
And it hasn't happened. But all of my knowledge and sensibility and understanding about the NBA, at some point, somebody is going to understand how valuable it will be to be a great player on the New York Knicks, and they're going to force their way there, and it's going to be a game changer for them. But I guess I can't guarantee it, but I feel like it's going to happen at some point.
That's so interesting to me, and I will say this as a native New Yorker. It's not Brooklyn. It's not. It's like it's not the Mets. It's not the Jets. It's the Giants. It's the Yankees. It's the Knicks. That's where all the real idolatry comes from. It really is. I mean, I've seen this my whole life.
You know what we found, Tony? You know, one of the reasons why the Lakers are all over ESPN is because of the analytics. No matter what anybody wants to say, the ESPN is responding to what the viewers tell them us that they want.
That's right.
And, you know, the Lakers go to any city in the country, except really for New York, but even when they're in Brooklyn. And the crowd is one quarter to half to two-thirds Laker fans. And it's because the Lakers are the Cowboys.
That's right.
They are a massive brand. But the Nets, we have found that the Nets are more popular outside of New York than they are in New York.
They're not popular in New York. No, they're not. They're not. It's a second borough. It's a second deal. No, it's true. Monday Night Football, a long time ago, they used to say to us, well, we're giving you Jets games. Jets games didn't rate. It didn't matter if they were good. Giants games. You know, that's just the way it is. Brian, thanks so much. Talk soon,
thanks,
I hope.
Thanks, Tony.
Brian
Happy
Windhorst
holidays,
is great. Yeah, you too. He's great. Love Brian Windhorst. We'll take a break. Bob Ryan, when we come back? Bob Ryan, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
The NBA playoffs are back. And on FanDuel, new customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Back in the day, news like this, your crew would have been writing each other letters.
Dearest Benjamin, wonderful news from the East. The spread has been covered.
Or maybe you'd use your phone to actually call someone.
Man, you see that dunk? Man, I saw that, Dom?
But these days, it's all about the group chat.
I love that high-fiving kitten emoji.
No matter how you tell them, let your crew know that all new FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Ooh, Morse code. Classic. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Virginia Coalition for the second time today. They will be appearing on Thursday night at the historic Howard Theater in Washington, D.C. This is called By and By. This is a good band. We've played them before.
Very good.
This is a real band.
Yes.
Kids, this is a real band, Virginia Coalition. Michael, if bands like Virginia Coalition want to send us their original music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And they play in the quintessential American sports writer, Bob Ryan. And, you know, Bob Ryan's name comes up on the set of PTI every single time we talk about hockey. Every single time. Because Wilbon is enraged that anyone could think that someone other than Wayne Gretzky might be might be the greatest hockey player of all time. Wilbon wants them put in jail first, then deported second. And they, oh, I'm sorry, they have to shut up first. And so I often tease him by saying, you know, the best player ever, Bobby Orr, right? Don't you say that all the time. But Bob Ryan, you do say that. You do say that. And explain it.
Well, taking zero away from Wayne Gretzky's ability to put the puck in the net or to create an opportunity for someone else. He's the greatest offensive machine in hockey history, period. No one can deny that. He's the greatest. No one ever talked about whether he ever back-checked. No one ever talks about whether he ever checked anybody. In a game in which hitting and being hit is endemic, he was never hit or hit anybody else.
Right.
So that's number one. I mean, he's the greatest offensive machine. There's much more to the game. And Bobby Orr was the greatest player of all time, even though his last game was 46 years ago. And he completely revolutionized the concept of what a defenseman could be. He was winning 8 Norris trophies while scoring 100 points, which people today would just have to just sit there and wait a minute. No, that didn't happen, right? No, it
right.
did happen, folks.
Right. Right.
Okay? So, I mean, that's a look, I know it's funny. I'm a baseball and a basketball guy first and foremost, but the one conviction that I hold the strongest is the one we just discussed.
So it's interesting, and I mentioned this the other day on this show, that Wilbon and I were talking about who was who in the hierarchy of hockey. And my friend David Israel weighed in, and he said, Bobby Orr is Willie Mays. Because he can beat you on offense and he can beat you on defense. And so if you think Willie Mays is the best player you ever saw, you ought to think that Bobby Orr is the best player you ever saw. You would concur with that, right?
That's a wonderful analogy, which I've never thought of in my life.
Yeah.
And he described it perfectly. I mean, here's a guy who wins. Once again, I'll repeat, 8 Norris trophies. And most of the time, I know once he got rolling in his third year or so, he was scoring 100 points a game, a year.
Yeah.
So that doesn't happen. Great. Well, David hit that one right.
No, David's got that. What he said was that Gretzky was Aaron Andruth, but you have to understand Mace.
He's Steph Curry, maybe. You know, that's a better analogy.
Okay. All right, let me move off this to the thing I should have led with, which was, can you believe that play? Can you believe that play?
My immediate, of course, my immediate reaction, and I did tweet it, was this is the proof, folks, never say never that you've ever seen. You always think you've seen everything. You know. Now, we've seen a couple of teams this year in football. There was that craziness at the end of that game when with the fumbled snap and then in the end zone and then,
yeah.
You know. Then,
yeah, yeah.
Okay. That was crazy, and that was a one-off. We've never seen any juxtaposition like that. Okay. So that's a fact. We've never seen anything like it. If it happened, it could only happen at the end of a game because it's a,
that's right.
I don't know whether I don't know what was going on in the mind of Jacoby Myers. He obviously had a brain F, and you know. But no, we've never seen anything like that, and that is a one-off. That a game has never ended like that we know of. If anyone can produce any proof of it, otherwise, I want to hear it.
It was an unbelievable 2 days with the Indianapolis Colts game, which you'd never seen, and then this is the worst play ever made. And you know, I don't know if the Patriots are punitive on any level. Maybe they are. Can Jacoby Myers, I don't think they would do anything to him this year.
No.
Do you think he stays with the team for next year?
Oh, I think that. No, I bet they circle the wagons on the guy.
Okay.
Assuming he's popular to start with. Assuming there's no negativity surrounding him in the locker room to start with, which I've never heard. There's no public references to that. I think they'll circle the wagons. And he did respond. He fessed up.
He did.
And so did Mac Jones from not being able to tackle Chandler Jones. He fessed up. You know who hasn't fessed up? The mentor.
Yeah, Bill Belichick. Yeah.
He had a 4-minute post game in which he was his surly self. Yeah, what can you say with this guy? We're stuck with the reality that he won the 6 rings and all that. But boy, this boorishness is just getting a little bit intolerable.
That was always my feeling years back. Is there any sense? I mean, it's an inevitable thing that we do, that we say, okay, Brady and Belichick are not together. Who is succeeding more? Well, clearly Brady succeeded more because he won a Super Bowl. But he is regressing to the mean. Very clearly, he sails it, he bounces it. If he doesn't have a 2-minute drill in him, he doesn't do much. But I wonder about the Patriots. I mean, they've had 3 years. They've had Cam Newton for a year. They tried. He was a great player at one point, not with the Patriots. Mac Jones was promising, at least. He won the same national championship that Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa won. Is there any sense that the Patriots are not making progress, Bob?
Oh, of course. They're stagnant now. They're a middle of the road blah team. There's nothing special about them, and they're not the most awful team. They still have a defense that can keep you in games. Their offense is bad. It's pathetic. And the only bright spot on the entire offense is Ramondre Stevenson, who does that. He's a hard-running kid. He's the offense. And other than that, no. There's lots of angst around here. Now, no one should feel sorry for the fans of the Patriots, you know, after the 21st century that they've experienced. We all understand that this is reality now, finally. They're just an ordinary, in NFL, if that. You know what? Their record is perfect. It's exactly what they've done. They're 7-7, and that's exactly the record that they've heard.
Yeah, they slog along in second gear. A lot of people think that Brady should come back for a year. I think that would be dreadful. Right, dreadful.
What is the matter with this? That would be bad for everybody.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Number one, because he wouldn't be able to do anything for him, and it would, you know, there's no point. No, he's not coming back here. I promise you that.
That would be good to know. Now, let me shift gears. The Celtics, I believe, have either the first or second best record in the NBA, even though they lost twice to Orlando, which is unthinkable. But I wonder about this. The Celtics had this volcanic thing happen right before they were going to start the season. They got rid of the coach and brought in one of the assistants who nobody had ever heard of outside of Boston, and many in Boston didn't know his name. And they're sailing along. Can you explain that?
Yes. Joe Mazzulla is well known in the NBA community. He was, in fact, interviewed as well as Will Hardy for the Utah job. Will Hardy, another Celtic assistant, who got that job. Mazzulla was a assistant coach on the rise. Now, he's well known in the college community too, in West Virginia, and all that. Now, the funny thing is, though, in the NBA, there's an assistant coach hierarchy in which who gets to sit and determining who gets to sit on the bench and who sits in the second row.
Second row, yeah.
He was a second row guy.
Oh.
And yet the league, he's no secret in the league. He coached in the summer league, a couple years ago. He's young. He's a prodigy. He's 34. Let me tell you this, Tom. The day that the news broke, the first public endorsement of him was from Jason Tatum. Now, that's a good sign for the when you're
best
player. That came out right away. Jason Tatum gave him his imprimatur. So that was good. These highly thought of, and you know, so it, but they got off to an incredible start. And it was incredible because no one thought it was going to be that good. And the one variable, though, and this is what, you know, now you're coming into my wheelhouse, they were shooting threes at an exceptionally good rate.
Right.
And the last four games, they haven't hit 30% on threes. They were 12 for 47 in their second loss to Orlando. And, you know, is this going to be a case for them of live by the three, die by the three? They better go to a plan B, I think. Now, I think they have the wherewithal to do that, but they've got to, you know, be able to shift gears a little bit quicker in games to realize that, hey, today's one of those nights.
Bobby, the Udoka thing remains mysterious around the country. There are, you know, all of these whispers about what happened, and nobody seems to be delving back in it. But he, in his first year as a coach, went to the NBA Finals. He's got to be really, really good. Does he have a future in the league, and if so, when and where?
That's going to be interesting because it might depend on whatever level of contrition, if you will, that he will display. Mm-hmm. You know, no, it's not this. It's known that he had a dalliance with a female in the office. Period. That died. So that's you know, in any workplace, we all know that you know, can be a very volatile, toxic thing. Okay, so. What's going to happen there? You know, and in the aftermath, his longtime partner has left him, Nia Long, and you know, his life is personal life is a bit in disarray right now.
Mm-hmm.
He was so highly thought of. It's interesting. Players get chances. We know that. Players, you know, with arrest records get chances. We know that. A coach who did this, he didn't break. You know, he may have been. A technical adulterer, since he was not married to Nia Long, even though they were together for 11 years, but that isn't a criminal act. So, you know, I would guess that if the dust settles a little bit, that he will resurface.
Yeah, because he's obviously really good. I'll get
He's very good.
Yeah,
he's very good, and there was no question about that. They felt blessed to have him. It was what a thing to have this young guy. Well, not young, appropriately. He's, you know, 45.
Yeah, but in your first year to go to the finals.
No, I know. It was pretty. No question. And from the middle of this, remember this, from the middle of January right up to the middle of the finals, they were the most successful. I won't say best, because the best team won. But they were the most successful team in the league. They won more games than anybody else. That wasn't a fluke. That was based on good basketball stuff, and he was the guy that was orchestrating the whole thing.
I'll go to your other wheelhouse, which is baseball, and I'll get you out of here on this. The Red Sox have let Mookie Betts go, and they've let Xander Bogaerts go. Is this, in your opinion, an ownership decision or a management decision?
Oh, I think this is management following the orders of how to proceed. People are hooting down Chaim Bloom, and my personal belief is that he is simply following. This is why he was hired.
Yeah.
He shops at the bargain basement. He did it very well at Tampa. They have, you know, the Red Sox dynamics have changed dramatically in the last 20 years. Remember, they are nothing more right now, and in my opinion, they. Of Fenway Sports Group, and I you know, they own Liverpool, they own the Penguins, they have Fenway Roush Racing, Keselowski. They've got other stuff we don't even know about. We don't care about. And I just think that the focus on the Red Sox has changed, and we're not going to do these foolish, you know, quote unquote contracts with people. People are very disturbed around here, very.
What?
And you know, because we know that the final shoe is about to drop this year. Rafael Devers is on his walk year. And if they let him go, after having let Betts go and Bogaerts go, I think people will really, really, really be out of their mind.
Can't imagine it would end up like Baltimore, where you would look at the seats for 5 years. I mean, it was a great franchise, and then there was nothing but empty seats. Can't imagine that at Fenway. Maybe
no,
you
we can't imagine that, but that it would go that direction. But the attendance did drop significantly last year. You know, they got into that plenty of good seats available mode that they hadn't been in for 30 years.
Right.
At times, you know, they only right. So it's they're trending downward in that regard, and they have done nothing to placate the masses in the offseason. Yes, they signed Kenley Jansen. Yes, they just signed Justin Turner. They may be good moves, but they're not great moves. And by the way, remember the name Makataka Yoshida. That's their new leadoff man and left fielder from Japan.
Okay.
That didn't exactly get the people out.
Didn't there, wow them. Didn't wow them. Didn't wow them. Thank you, Bobby.
All right, there we go. Thank you, Tom. Good
Bob
talk.
Bob Ryan, love to have him on. The quintessential American sports writer. We'll take a break. We'll have email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all you folks.
Those are the jinglers from Jingle Fest 2022. That's lovely. Nigel, you want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Got the bagel sandwiches today. A very good day. Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com, forward a location in the D.C. area nearest you, then pop on in, and you'll be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, come with me, my love, to the Sea of Love. I want to tell you how much I love you. There's a great movie called Sea of Love with Al Pacino.
Yes.
I think that the original song Sea of Love is Freddie somebody and the somethings.
I think it's Phil
and
Phillips.
The Moon Glows. Phil Phillips and the Moon Glows, maybe, or am I making that up? Phil Phillips. Okay.
Phil Phillips. There's a weird name for his group, but yeah, I'll look that up.
So the movie Sea of Love with Al Pacino and Ellen Barkin and John Goodman is a great movie.
Phenomenal.
It's a great movie.
Phillips with The Twilight.
Oh, that's
good.
Okay.
Call Twilight. Nigel.
Okay.
Yes.
Well done.
Thanks to our guests today, Brian Windhorst and Bob Ryan. Thanks to our sponsors, Indochino and Spotify. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. My thanks to Tamara Graham. Tamara has sent giant cashews and baked goods for Christmas, and I appreciate it very much. And as she says, go Broncos. She's the world's greatest Broncos fan.
Yes, she is.
And they stink.
Maybe only.
They stink at the moment.
Thanks, Tamara.
From Chris in Durham, North Carolina, it has become a tradition in my house to watch bad holiday movies. And it's a Hallmark movie or stars Mario Lopez or Melissa Joan Hart. It goes to the top of the list. So my wife fired up the Hulu, and we scrolled through the endless number of movies and landed on a Hanukkah movie. The movie starts opening with a shot of Paris and a song that leads with a guitar, and I instantly recognize a familiar voice. After a few more shots of Paris, the shot continues with a man playing a guitar. It pans up. It is none other than Dan Byrne.
He's everywhere.
Himself. He is everywhere. The fabric of the show is amazing. If other littles are interested, the name of the movie is Menorah in the Middle, starring Lucy DeVito. I can't give the movie a rating yet, as I had to craft this email immediately after hearing the opening song. I hope your holidays are full of joy, laughter, and Johnny Walker Blue. Dan Byrne is brilliant. I don't know what else we can say. Dan Byrne is brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. The song about Matt Ryan was brilliant.
Oh, don't give Matt Ryan the lead.
Yeah.
And he's got the songs from the Mr. Tony Show on his website. Now, of course, it'd be better
$13.72.
Yes, go check it out.
It's the cheapest album you've ever heard.
It's
from
fantastic.
Stephen Good in Fayetteville, Arkansas, speaking of Dan Byrne. I've been impressed with Dan Byrne's music on your show for many years. Well, he's only been on for about 3 years. However, his song about Matt Ryan on Monday's show really hit home for me. You see, I attended Virginia Tech, and I was at the game in 2007 against Boston College when Matt Ryan was their quarterback. Virginia Tech was ranked number 8, and Boston College was number 2. It was a cold and rainy night game on national television. Miserable, but nobody in Lane Stadium cared. Virginia Tech was up 10-0 with just over two minutes remaining in the game. There was about to be a party in Blacksburg. Matt Ryan ruined the party. He led BC to a last-minute victory, and all of a sudden the reality of how wet and cold we were in that stadium sunk in. I will never forget that game and the miserable two-mile walk home. You hate pumpkins, watermelons, bananas, and squirrels. I hate Matt Ryan. I'm glad he holds the records for the biggest blown leads overall and in the Super Bowl, and I'm glad Dan Byrne forever documented those failings in a song. Not that you're bitter. Here's another one about this. This is from Rusty Frederick in Savannah, Georgia.
Rusty.
The Dan Byrne song about Matt Ryan is, of course, brilliant. However, as a long-suffering, lifelong Atlanta Falcons fan, history compels me to report that Mr. Byrne is only telling you part of the story. Yes, Matt Ryan was the quarterback on the wrong side of the biggest blown lead in Super Bowl history and in any regular season game. But did you also know that on January 20th, 2013, the Falcons led the 49ers 17-0 in the NFC Championship game? They lost 28-24. That's the biggest blown lead in the history of the NFC Championship game. Mm. And on October 26, 2014, the Falcons led the Lions 21-0 in London. They lost 22-21. That's the biggest blown lead in any NFL game played outside the United States. I'm a big Matt Ryan fan. He's clearly the best quarterback in team history, but the Super Bowl record, the NFC Championship game record, the regular season record, and the international game record. Just call him Bobby Jones, Mr. Tony. He's accomplished the career grand slam. From Derek in Akron, you were understandably surprised when you found out Paris Saint-Germain, or PSG as people talk about it, has never won the Champions League, especially with these three superstars the past couple of years. Not to mention the nearly unlimited money provided by the Qatar Sports Investment Group that owns the club. The issue seems to be found in a couple of places. They play in the French league called Ligue 1. This is the West Coast Conference of the European Soccer Leagues, and that makes PSG Gonzaga. They cruise through their leagues most years, and by the time you get to the knockout stage of Champions League in the spring, they will typically have their league in the bag, but it means they're not peaking nor prepared for the other top clubs from Europe. Plus, when Messi, Mbappe, and Neymar all play together, you have 3 of the 10 outfield players who barely work defensively. Yeah. This leaves them exposed in those big matches against teams that they simply can't bully on talent alone. Hope this helps and love the show. It does, Derek in Akron. From Tony Lutz in Redmond, Oregon. Of course the Argentinians were going nuts Sunday. They get all that Budweiser that couldn't be sold at the World Cup. Prayers for you and hoping for a full and speedy recovery. Thank you for that. Listening to your misery with your condition, Carly Simon's lyrics come to mind because I haven't got time for the pain. I haven't got room for the pain. I haven't the need for the pain. From David J. He's actually David Little. He's David J. Little.
Wow.
Hi, Tony. Playing little. The birthday game. As in Australia, we say day, month, year. My son was born 2009. So that would be
September 20th.
Right.
Yep. 2009.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's a good one.
That's good.
From John Engelmeyer in Chocowinty. I'm not pronouncing that correctly, North Carolina. Yes, we have a golf course. The best birthday is that of my nephew who shares my name. He was born on November 11th, 2011. 11, 11, 11, of course.
Oh, that's
but
a
that's
good one.
You know, that's good, but so was 999, so was 777.
Yeah,
you know?
The ones are cleaner.
Yes. From Shireem Goodlett.
Good point.
Don't know if I qualify as a little since I don't catch a show every day, although I do most days. I do, however, catch PTI daily via DVR and have done so from the start. The woman I'm related to by marriage thinks you and Wilbon are hilarious. Admittedly, so do I. See who that is on the phone. Anyway, I'm writing because I've yet to hear anyone claim the official number 10 birthday of the Tony Kornheiser Show, to which I propose my niece, Naraya. Her date of birth is October 10th, 2010. So that's 10-10-10. Can you get rid of that? And I tell my father, to whom I'm related by birth, that she has the undisputed best birthday in our family. Also, and in closing, I'm born and raised in Rochester, New York, and a second-generation Bills fan, so I take great pride in every mention of Rochester on PTI, as I now live in Northwest Florida, but that's an entirely different topic for an entirely different show. From Joe Poknish in Austin, Texas. I do hope you get some relief on your back. I, too, had a very bad herniation causing shooting pain up my leg that happened on my honeymoon. The five-hour flight back from Vermont was one of the most agonizing experiences of my life. I had no relief from an epidural steroid shot that made me almost pass out. The surgery I did an amazing job relieving the pain. I hope the same for you. On a more fun note, my daughter was born on 1/21/21, which is not only a palindrome, but she was born on the 21st day of the 21st year of the 21st century.
Wow, that's
big. Which is
pretty
neat.
That is a good one, yes.
From Barry Katz in Columbus, Ohio. Dear King of the Littles, Patriots lose on the worst play ever. Thanks for easing our pain, respectively, Jim Marshall, Leon Lett, Joe Pisarcik, Mark Sanchez. Yeah, it replaces the butt fumble.
Yeah,
it's the worst.
Oh, it's going to be replayed forever. Yes.
From Abraham in Silver Spring, the satirical 1978 drama And Justice for All, starring Al Pacino and Jack Warden, was set in Baltimore. While it was directed by Norman Jewison, the screenplay was in fact written by Valerie Curtin and Barry Levinson. The film received an Oscar nomination for the Best Original Screenplay. It is remembered for the scene where Pacino's character famously shouts, "You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!" Yeah, it's not Al Pacino, but Al Pacino.
Al Pacino.
From Stephen Kaplan in Alpharetta, Georgia. Happy Hanukkah. May your candle never drip and your dreidel always spin. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Really, that's nice. I appreciate
very
that.
Lovely.
From Grandpa Larry in Arlington. This is Larry Zebrack. He went to Valley Stream North High School. He was a great high school athlete and was a basketball teammate of my campmate, Warren Freistadt, at Valley Stream North High School. He's lived in Washington for a long time. Is a really great athlete. I know it was a fabulous sports weekend, but the lead story has to be Anthony Davis out again for at least a month. You predicted it last week. All the best with surgery. Thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, he was trails yesterday. He was trails. And it was, raise your hand if you didn't have this one. He's out for a month.
Yes.
He's always out, right? He's always out, Anthony Davis. Doesn't matter how great he is. As they say, the greatest ability is availability. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Well, that's about it from me. I'd just like to say all the best for Christmas and a happy new year.
Thanks, Ringo.
Thanks, Ringo.
All the best.
Go and get a picture of it. You never know when you'll be back again. Ain't it good, Hollywood, that you took the best of me?
You're gonna want it in LA.
I liked you better. I
I wonder what you're hiding under there. I wonder what you do when you get lonely. This is the part that you can't get right, and this is the part that your girlfriend likes. Wouldn't have it any other way. Well, you're moving mountains, but you don't know why. And you're chasing heaven down the by. You look at the things that make you larger. But this is the part that you can't get right, and this is the part that your girlfriend likes. Wouldn't have it any other way. Well, you're moving.